Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life. Khalashing for khalas? Want to bri or fine dine? Stay tuned to Hi FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Good morning and welcome to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, coming to you from my little studio in Highlands North. And gosh, do I miss everybody. I almost feel as though I've been on permanent lockdown. In fact, I must say I am petrified to go out. But I don't think I've been to the studio for 8 or 9 months. But please God, there'll be a vaccine soon and we can all try, emphasis on try, to get back to normal. So, yesterday was a rather miserable day. It was a bit cold and rainy and whatever. And I thought, you know, I've got to make, I feel like a soup that's going to nurture me. That's going to, I feel like it's comfort food. And I've been reading this incredible book. Fascinating. One of those, you've got to get this one. And it's called Food Mood Connection by Dr. Uma Naidu. Now, she is a psychiatrist in Boston, but I'm going to give you the lowdown on her and tell you a little bit about her later on in the program when I connect with her in Boston. But I decided, you know, I spent most of Shabbos reading this book and I decided, right, time to make something. Let's get out something that's going to make me feel, it's going to comfort me, it's going to nurture me, it's going to take away anxiety and make me just feel good in this miserable weather. So I needed something, obviously, that makes me feel full and healthy, not bloated, and, you know, do all the things that make you feel good. And sure enough, I found the recipe in her book, and it's a hearty vegetable soup. Simple, vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free. I must say, the rest of my day somehow was taken care of. I actually didn't need, you know, the bread to dunk in your soup. You know, I like to dunk a little bit of bread in my soup because, as everybody knows, I am crazy for bread. But this soup has... Get your pens and papers out. Let me give this to you before I start chatting to Dr. Naidu. You need this. I mean, it's got peas in the soup, so that's your magnesium. Broccoli for iron. Sweet potatoes for the vitamin A. It's low in saturated fat and high in fiber and antioxidants. And it just works so well. And what you'll need, you can make it in about half an hour. What you'll need is 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 leek. This, I would say this is for about 4 people. 1 leek, long, nice, big leek, sliced, a clove of garlic, just sort of finely chopped, 150 grams of fresh or frozen peas, 300 grams of broccoli florets. Now, I know that we, for kosher purposes, I use the frozen ones, but you can use broccoli florets, or you can use the stems. 1 sweet potato, unpeeled, and cut into 1 centimeter cubes. 1 tablespoon of salt, plus more if you need it. 1 teaspoon of black pepper, that helps with absorption, plus a little more if you need it at the end, you'll see. 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme and 1/2 teaspoon of dried parsley. You'll also need 1 to 1.5 liters of hot vegetable stock or some boiling water. Okay, and some fresh parsley chopped, which is optional to put on the top. You know, I always say it depends obviously, when they say 1 to 1.5 liters of water, it also depends on the size of your pot. If your pot is too big, then obviously the water is going to evaporate, so you'll need to add more water. But the pot that I use, and she suggests, is a heavy cast iron pot, you know, like the Dutch oven. And you cook everything over medium heat. So you heat the oil in this, in your cast iron pot, and you add the leeks chopped up and the garlic, and you saute that for about 3 to 5 minutes until the leeks are soft and almost translucent. And you add the peas, the broccoli florets, the sweet potato, salt, pepper, thyme, parsley, everything. And you just cook it for about 3 to 5 minutes again. And once the vegetables appear partly cooked, you add the vegetable stock. Okay, and you partially cover this. Now, obviously, vegetable stock is, if you've got vegetable stock at home, oh, all the more credit, homemade, beautiful. If you don't have, then just use, I would use about 2 to 3 cubes of vegetable stock in my 1.5 liters of water. But as I say, cook the vegetables until they're soft, because sometimes vegetable stock has got something in it that sort of thickens up when you start cooking, and that's why I only add it at the end. I make sure the vegetables are all lovely and soft, then I add the stock, because it, you know, it takes longer for the vegetables to start cooking once you add stock and water. And then you just partially cover it with the, put a lid on top and allow the soup to simmer on medium to low heat for about 20 minutes, half an hour. And then you taste it again, season. Always season your food, always taste it as you go along. And you season it to taste, and you can add a little bit more salt, a little bit more pepper, and that's it. And it was absolutely delicious. And when I first read out the recipe to the family, it was like, no beans, Ma. But you want to put lentils in? Put lentils in. Lentils are lovely. They're wonderful. And in fact, Dr. Naidu uses lentils quite a bit. So that's the vegetable soup. And after the break, we will come back and we will chat directly to Dr. Uma Naidu.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back to the SN Fresen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, and as I said to you before, I'm really so excited to share my interview with you with Dr. Uma Naidu, who is the author of Food Mood Connection. Now, Dr. Uma Naidu is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist, professional chef, and nutrition specialist. And her niche work is in nutritional psychiatry, and she is regarded both nationally and internationally as a medical pioneer in this more newly recognized field. She's been featured in Wall Street Journal, ABC News, Harvard Health Press, Goop, and many others. And Dr. Uma Naidu has a special interest on the impact of food in mood and other mental conditions. In her role as a clinical scientist, Dr. Naidu founded and directs the first hospital-based clinical service in nutritional psychiatry in the USA. She is the director of nutritional and lifestyle psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital and director of nutritional psychiatry at the Massachusetts General Hospital Academy while serving on the faculty of Harvard Medical School. Dr. Naidu graduated from the Harvard Longwood Psychiatry Residency Training Program in Boston, during which she received several awards, Hence, her being asked by the American Psychiatric Association to author the first academic text in nutritional psychiatry. In addition to this, Dr. Naidu is the author of, in some countries, Food-Mood Connection, and in some other countries, This Is Your Brain on Food. And it was recently released, and in her book, she shows the cutting-edge science explaining the ways in which food contributes to our mental health and how a sound diet can help treat and prevent a wide range of psychological and cognitive health issues, from ADHD to anxiety, depression, OCD, and others. Her book, her latest book, contains, I think it's 10 chapters, yes, where she talks in the first chapter about the gut-brain romance. Wonderful. Fascinating, as I say, I must read. Chapter 2 is on depression, probiotics, omega-3s, and the Mediterranean eating pattern. Chapter 3 is on anxiety, fermented foods, dietary fiber, and the tryptophan myth. Chapter 4, I'm just going to confirm this, yes, was on PTSD, glutamates, blueberries, and old friends bacteria. Chapter 5, ADHD, gluten, milk, caseins, and chapter 6 goes into dementia and brain fog, microgreens, rosemary, and the mind diet. Chapter 7, obsessive compulsive disorder, glycine and the dangers of orthorexia nervosa. Chapter 8 was insomnia and fatigue, where she talks about anti-inflammatory diets and chamomile. Chapter 9 was bipolar disorder and schizophrenia. Oh, my dog has just come to visit me. Chapter 10 talks about libido, oxytocin, fenugreek, and the science of aphrodisiacs. And there are 11 chapters, and the 11th chapter, one of the most important, cooking and eating for your brain. Okay, welcome to the show, and thank you so much, Dr. Naidu, for joining us. We've tried to get this together, and finally, it's done. So, first thing I need to ask you is, how did you go from one extreme to the next, from being a psychiatrist and then graduating with the Culinary Institute of America?
I think that it stems from what you mentioned in terms of my childhood. I always grew up around a large Indian family with, you know, food and love and spending time together. But also one of the families with the largest number of physicians in South Africa. And so there was that sort of mutual influence that I had of both health, wellness, the field of medicine, but also there was also food, nutrients, and lunch. So I think that those were all of my influences growing up. And when I moved to study at Harvard, I carried forward with me, you know, recipes, how to blend spices that my grandmother and my mother and my aunt had taught me. Yes. And when you move that far away, food is often a connection you can maintain. And I found that in my cooking journey, which happened much later, because at home, of course, there were always many cooks in the kitchen, and I learned how to bake because of my love of science. That when I began to study in Boston and at Harvard, cooking really became a space of mindfulness and creativity for me. I enjoyed it. I took my grandmother's and my mom's recipes, and I was practicing. But for me, it was a joy. It wasn't a chore. And I recognized that it was something I wanted to do more of in my life. I began to incorporate, I think, principles of how I was raised with mindfulness, meditation, that mind-body connection, my grandmother saying, well, have this spice, so make me a special tea or a special milk, you know, because you have a cold or you have a certain ailment. And I brought forth all of that with me. And the way that I began to integrate it into my work as a medical doctor and as a psychiatrist was I felt that even if someone was taking a medication, they needed to have more options to feel emotionally well, and that what they were eating, their lifestyle, exercise, all of that mattered. And I began asking those questions. So, you know, that was how the interest stemmed and grew from there in terms of studying these different components. And really, the strict recovery school is linked to this, but the link here is sort of a funny one because being a young student in Boston, I couldn't, you know, afford cable television. And so I would be able to watch television when I was studying and see public television, which was free. And Julia Child had this show that I would watch all the time. And, you know, she'd be sharing French recipes and be very funny, but also really be teaching something. And I really became my food hero because I sort of felt a sense of confidence that if she could do something, you know, I could try it at home as well. And so when I realized and reading more about her life that she had gone to culinary school later in life and it was actually her second career, I thought, well, why not me? You know, why can't I do that? And I found a way, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. I found a way to be able to spend some time at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. I spent some time at the Le Cordon Bleu the original school in Paris where she trained, at the original location. But then I made a consolidated decision to study in Boston, and the reason for that was it best balanced my time being able to continue my medical practice at the hospital but also study part-time. So that was how I went to culinary school. It was really a following my passion and love for food and understanding nutrition better.
Do you think that doctors today know enough about nutrition together with medicine? You know, are they sort of just pushing medicine, you know, treating the, how do we say it, treating the symptom, not the cause?
I think doctors are in a very difficult position worldwide, not just in the United States, but in South Africa and other countries, because we really are not taught enough nutrition at medical school, and research papers have been written about this. Mm-hmm. Doctors are expected to counsel patients about, you know, how to eat for hypertension or lowered cholesterol, but we're not given the formal proper education. Some medical schools in the world have done better than others, but many are still lagging behind. And so I think that doctors are placed in a difficult position. You know, I made the effort to study nutrition separately because for me it was a gap. And when I began counseling patients, offering them additional solutions to medication, not instead of medication, but additional solutions, I felt that I had to fulfill that gap myself. So I think that doctors, and the way that many countries work in terms of the reimbursement for hospital-based doctors and even private practice practitioners, is that, you know, medications are what drives the insurance process. And often, to be honest, people may expect a medication for an ailment. So I think it's twofold. I think there's certain expectation, but I think where the world is changing now is people are looking for more natural solutions, and food is one of those things. It's not an either-or in terms of medications, but it is certainly an additional solution to improve our well-being, and in the work that I do and my research on mental well-being.
And you must have found, I mean, it must be so gratifying to diagnose a situation and to treat it with different foods. And you talk about this in your book, about the different people that have come to you with different problems and how you've helped them, you know, with their food, with their changing their eating patterns.
Exactly. So that has been very gratifying and really is the basis of the work that I do, along with, you know, at times prescribing medications, and a full practice, but also really finding solutions for individuals who want to use more tools and sometimes are not, you know, are able to cope with going on a slow, steady, personalized nutritional psychiatry treatment plan. So if they're able to tolerate that, many are, you know, it really is very gratifying to see them improve and do better.
Right. And what does Umanadu wake up and drink and eat first thing in the morning?
So I actually, in terms of drinking, I actually start off my day with a cup of coffee. I love coffee, and I have one cup, maybe one or two cups in the morning. But I also have really started to pay attention to breakfast, and I have a glass of water. Water is my favorite go-to beverage during the day, just plain water, filtered or, you know, sparkling, which is unflavored. And those are what I drink and sip throughout the day. So after my morning cup of coffee, I make sure that I eat something. And usually it's something nutritious that's filling. And I will make ahead on the weekend little chia puddings with coconut milk and chia seeds, and then chop it with different fruit to make it interesting each day. And I set these out on the weekend so that I have something small but nutritious to eat every morning. And that way I don't have to think about it when I'm working. And then I use different brain food toppings for this, like extra dark chocolate that's natural, which is rich in cacao flavanols, or, you know, blueberries or something that I like. And, you know, if I'm traveling, it's something that I can also take with me. So that's, you know, that's my morning routine. And somewhere in that, in the morning, I'll always have my, you know, what they now call golden chai, but something that, you know, my grandmother would make for me as a child, which is turmeric in some sort of nut milk, and sometimes with some added chai tea to it, some variation of that. That's one of my favorites. And it's something I could have any time of day.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
You went through a rather horrific time when you were diagnosed with breast cancer, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And how did you find, that your eating pattern changed quite a lot? How did it work hand in hand with your mental well-being, social well-being, and food-wise?
So the diagnosis was very unexpected because I was feeling otherwise healthy. And I think the shock of the diagnosis and the speed when you're blessed by access to great medical care as I am, It happened very, very fast. And so there was a way in which my mind really hadn't caught up with my body. And I feel that the great lesson for me was I was able to change, you know, using my, I guess, calling back to my Hindu roots, really reframe what was potentially a very devastating situation into seeing how I could best use it to help me grow and heal myself. And the way that happened was that when I realized how, I'm not generally an anxious person, but when I was facing my first chemotherapy treatment, understanding the exact medications, the exact side effects was very scary, frightening, you know, feeling fearful. And I really had to make a choice that day and that morning about, which is what I write about in my book, really, you know, how do I do this? How do I get over my own sense of angst? And I realized in that moment that what I was counseling my patients on and practicing myself by trying to embrace a healthy diet and trying to include the foods that I talk about, that I could up my game in that way and really focus on, you know, anxiety busting foods and how I, you know, did maybe more meditation, spent more time in mindfulness, used apps to reduce my stress, that type of thing. And so food was a very big component of it, so much so that my doctors would be, you know, excited every week to find out what I was eating that was helping me, really helping me, not have the side effects that were otherwise devastating. You know, there's certain side effects you can't avoid. Hair loss, changes to your nails, that type of thing. You can't change those because chemotherapy does remove those. But there are other things like the nausea, vomiting, physical side effects, that, you know, I really went through many, many months of rigorous treatment without those side effects. And I really credit that to being blessed with the knowledge of how I could fine-tune my diet and what I was eating, when I was eating, you know, including spices and foods that were calming, foods that helped my mood, and just practicing what I was really working on with my patients for many years.
Would you be able to try and explain to the listeners, just as simply as possible, the real connection between the gut and the brain?
Of course. So, you know, it's hard for people to think that these two organs, which are in different parts of the body, are connected. But I think that when they understand a few things, such as the fact that the gut and the brain start and grow from the very same cells in the embryo when our bodies are developing. But then as the body develops, they separate out into different parts of the body, but they are made from the same cells. That's helpful to know. The second thing is that throughout our lives, these two areas of our body are connected by the 10th cranial nerve, which is called the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve, I like to call a two-way superhighway or two-way freeway between the gut and the brain and the brain and the guts, you know, 24/7, working all the time, allowing chemical messages and other messages to travel back and forth. The reason it's important to understand that is when you think about the fact that our food is being digested in the gut, then you understand that as food is broken down, different chemicals and different reactions that occur to the food are impacted, are impacting the gut and also being transmitted through the vagus nerve. That's a simple way of saying it. Many more chemical reactions and a lot more biochemistry and physiology involved. But in a nutshell, that is what it helps us understand. And then the other fact for people to understand besides those two is that serotonin is called the happiness hormone. It's the it's found in what medications such as Prozac or fluoxetine, which are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. But more than 90% of the serotonin receptors are actually found in the gut. So when people realize those three facts and that serotonin is that the receptors are coming in contact with food and digestion and what's going on in the gut, then we understand another way that the brain is involved in this, and that therefore those three factors help us understand just very simply the gut-brain connection and how food can begin to impact our mental well-being.
Now, I know that you're a great believer in eat the orange, not the orange juice. So I take a probiotic every single morning, and I'm just getting a little tired of it. And I just wanted to know, what alternatives are there that can directly help my gut?
Absolutely. So, you know, many people take a supplement, and it really is dependent, like you said, on how they feel. If you're not feeling great on that supplement, then switching to fermented foods or dairy or non-dairy plain yogurts that contain live active cultures will bring back those good bacteria to your gut. So in the U.S., we have non-dairy yogurts now that have live active cultures. So I always suggest, like I speak about whole healthy foods, eat the orange, not and skip the orange juice, because the orange juice has all the added sugars and no fiber.
Yeah.
And if it's store-bought, that's what I'm concerned about. There's often a lot of added sugar. But when it comes to probiotics, things like fermented foods and things like dairy and non-dairy yogurts have those positive bacteria that you need for your gut. And fermented foods can be kimchi, miso, kefir, which is a soured yogurt, you know, sauerkraut, pickles, several types of food. Kombucha is another one that people recognize. And so you could switch to including fermented foods in your diet every day. You could switch to a plain yogurt that has active cultures in it and, you know, do that instead of taking a supplement. So there are slow and steady ways to work on gut health through food as well.
Now, you go through so many amazing things in your book as well. You know, everybody may think, and I hope I'm not putting this across that way, but, you know, we're talking medically and, you know, from a psychiatric point of view, but you also talk about the how, what a person needs, you know, in their hygienic kitchen, so to speak. All your favorite pieces of equipment that you need to cook. What is your favorite piece of equipment for cooking?
I think that's split between something as simple as I travel. My family laughs at me because I actually travel with my chef knife kit. Yes. Because I like my own set of knives that I've used since culinary school, and I, you know, sharpen on my own and I use all the time. And, you know, my family has joked with me when outside of COVID times that, you know, I carry this knife kit. But it's a professional knife kit, so even if the authorities opened it, they could see my chef coat and my kit that it's related. I'm not just carrying some kind of weapon in my not my hand luggage, obviously, in my suitcase. Yeah. So that's obviously my go-to. But, you know, in terms of equipment, I'm very excited by a new piece of equipment. Not new, it's been around a few years, but the Instant Pot. And the Instant Pot basically is a pot that has like 11 or 12 functions, from pressure cooking to making a soup or stew. And you can pressure cook something like dal or lentils in, you know, 3 to 5 minutes. You can, you know, do so many different functions. I've made homemade plain yogurt. I've done lots of fun things with it. So I feel like a piece of equipment that does so many things is space saving for many of us. And you can do a lot with it. So I love that. And another piece of equipment that I think really brings back health benefits. So I should clarify, the Instant Pot, I think, is really helpful for people trying to include more plant-based protein, things like beans, nuts, seeds, legumes, that they can cook more from scratch very quickly in that type of pressure cooker. And then the third piece of equipment that also has, I feel, a lot of health benefits and therefore brain health benefits is the air fryer oven or an air fryer. Mm-hmm. And the air fryer basically it doesn't use oil, but allows the way that the oven is set up, or some of these are, you know, we have different versions of air fryer. But you can make something like a, you know, zucchini fry, which is a courgette, you know, make it into a potato chip almost, but without oil. So using a healthy vegetable, no oil, and have it come out really crispy. Yes. So, you know, for kids, you can make them carrot chips, so you can make them, you know, something healthier than a potato chip. And I think that brings back a lot of health benefits as well. For people who want that crispness, but can avoid unhealthy oils or deep frying. You know, there are also healthy fats and healthy oils, but you can avoid the deep frying that, you know, is not great for us.
Now, stocking up our pantry. I've got to pick your brain on this. I know that there's one old cliche, and don't go shopping when you're hungry. Okay.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah. Be mindful and know what you're going to be making and things like that. But I love your acronym for brain foods. Berries and beans. I'm not going to go through it all, because I'd like everybody to buy the book and go through it and see what your brain foods are.
Yeah.
And really good. And I think that one of the most important things is your omega-3. You talk about omega-3 quite a bit. And explain the importance of that.
Sure. So omega-3 fatty acids are found in things like good sources of seafood, fatty fish like salmon, mackerel, anchovy, sardines, things like that. And what the omega-3 fatty acids do, those are seafood sources, but they bring back really healthy fats that are anti-inflammatory and antioxidant to the brain. And they've been shown in clinical studies as well as to reduce depression and to help anxiety. I as you mentioned earlier, I usually go to the food source, and therefore I mentioned different types of seafood in the book. But people who don't eat fish can also get short-chain omega-3s from plant-based sources, and those would include flax seeds, hemp seeds, algae, sea vegetables, walnuts, chia seeds, those types of things. So you can still get it from other sources. The richest source, however, are seafood. So if you do eat seafood, or you can take a supplement in that instance, say you don't eat seafood but you're willing to take a supplement, that, you know, that could be an option as well, because the brain boosting benefits for mood and anxiety specifically, as well as other things, are very helpful. So I think it's just useful for people to know those things.
Okay, and my last question, because it's getting later here in South Africa. How do we get to sleep? I just find counting sheep, tossing and turning, and I don't want to take anything to medical to try medicine to help you. What can I take?
So there are two things that I recommend. So as you know, in the book, each chapter has a list of foods to embrace that you can use for that condition and foods to avoid. So in the sleep chapter, two things that people have found helpful. I'm not sure in South Africa if we have access to tart cherries, but tart cherry juice, it's a specific type of cherry, and it can be made into a juice. And it actually has been shown in clinical studies to help insomnia. But it's not a bean cherry, it's not a different type of cherry, it's a very specific type. So if it's possible and you have it available, I would suggest looking for that. And I suggest making it into juice or having it as a snack.
So what is that cherry called again? Sorry?
Tart cherries. Tart cherries, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's one. Again, that depends on availability. But a very simple trick that I tell people is that there are melatonin-rich foods. And melatonin-rich foods include things like eggs, good sources of dairy, which is, in my opinion, the grass milk-fed dairy, and then some vegetables also listed in the book. Some of those vegetables are broccoli and asparagus. So I say to people, flip your breakfast. Have an omelette or frittata in the evening. Use those eggs, add some of those vegetables, because those foods contain melatonin in natural forms. Uh-huh. So just including that rather than a supplement or other things, it can be something that you try out to try to get your body used to sleeping well. And, you know, along with that comes good sleep hygiene. So not having coffee after about 2 p.m. in the afternoon. You know, having a coffee early in the day, being mindful of alcohol. People who might have a glass of wine to help them sleep don't realize that they might go to sleep, but the alcohol is actually disrupting their sleep architecture. So ultimately, it's going to disrupt their sleep. So those little things are important for people to know. Embracing good sleep hygiene, and then, you know, a few tricks around food that they can include at night, and foods to avoid, and then, you know, a few specific things that really do help our sleep, all of which are listed.
Right. Now, we're coming towards the end. My time is running out here. Somebody's pointing a finger at me, so I just want to ask you, how can we get hold of you?
Absolutely, thank you. So we have a lot of presence on Instagram. You can get updated information on my account, on all social channels, which is at Dr. Uma Naidoo, but I'll spell that for you. It's at DrUmaNaidoo. And please subscribe to my website, where you'll get updated newsletters, and we have an upcoming live brain challenge with me over December, live classes with me to help people prepare for the holidays in terms of their better brain health, because my belief is, why hit January and be struggling? Why not start in December and work yourself in a healthy way through the holidays while still having fun? And you can sign up at my website, omanaidoomd.com, where you can subscribe by sharing your email if you wish, and you'll have access to all the information that you need for the challenge as well.
Well, I think that's great, and I think that a lot of people will be joining your newsletter, hopefully. And it's been terrific speaking to you, and I thank you so much for sharing all this wonderful knowledge with us.
Thank thank you so much for inviting me on your show. I really appreciate it. I hope people will enjoy the book.
I hope so, and I'm going to give out a couple of recipes now from your book to help people sleep, help people with depression, help people with anxiety. So I'll be sharing those with the listeners as well.
Great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back to the Essen Fresen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, and I hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Uma Naidoo. Nearly called her Uma Thurman. Anyway, so I said that I would share a couple of things with you with regards to menus for people that are feeling miserable, a little bit depressed, and I want to tell you, with COVID going on, we're allowed to feel a little bit miserable. So this is one of the menus to help with depression. And she says, have for breakfast some mung beans, mung bean tofu scrambled egg. Then a tablespoon of extra dark chocolate chips. And then at lunch, hearty vegetable soup, which is the vegetable soup that I gave you earlier, the beginning of the show. Then after lunch, you can have some spiced nut mix. For dinner, baked salmon with walnut kale pesto. So that's easy enough to make. I mean, that is just walnuts and kale. But of course, you can find the proper recipe in her book, which is a terrific book. And I think it would make a lovely present for Hanukkah or for Christmas presents. And I know that you will most certainly enjoy this book. And then she says, for dessert, you can have a fresh orange and a glass of red wine. Okay, so remember, if you're battling to sleep, maybe better be careful with the red wine, because you can get very thirsty in the middle of the night, and then that breaks your sleep. Anyway, the spiced mixed nuts are a great thing to have as a snack. And I'm going to quickly give you that recipe as well. So this recipe for nuts, a nut mix includes pumpkin seeds for the iron, Brazil nuts for the selenium, cayenne pepper, and turmeric. So you'll need about 1 teaspoon ground turmeric, 1/4 teaspoon black pepper, 1/4 teaspoon garlic powder, 1/4 teaspoon cayenne pepper, and 2 teaspoons of salt. 1 tablespoon olive oil, 200 grams of plain roasted pumpkin seeds, and 150 grams Brazil nuts. You preheat the oven to 150 and line a baking sheet with parchment paper. You mix the turmeric, black pepper, garlic powder, cayenne pepper, salt, and olive oil in a medium stainless steel bowl. You toss in the pumpkin seeds and nuts, and you spread the seeds and nuts in a single layer on the lined baking paper. And then you roast for about 10 minutes, cool and serve. Watch them, because you don't want it to burn. Cool and serve, and store in an airtight glass jar at room temperature for up to 2 weeks. So there's your nut snack during the day to keep you feeling good. And I hope that you go out and buy the book, as I said, because there is just so much to learn from this exceptionally creative, mindful, and medical person. Thank you. So, as we come to the end of the show and towards the end of the year, I just want to wish you all a happy holiday. I'm not sure if will I be here in 2 weeks' time. Yes, probably. But for those who are going away before, have a wonderful holiday. Please stay healthy. Please stay safe. And remember, it's the eat and meet that makes the show complete.